Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast. Where we fight depression with the power of music. I'm your professional handicapped host, James Cox. And I have another interview today. We're just giving you banger after banger. But this time, I got a special interview. His name is Casey Armstrong. He is originally from Lakeville, Ontario, Canada. But now I think he is in Bradford, Ontario, Canada.
That's right.
Yes, and we were having a conversation about weather. So, yeah.
Two people came from Brantford, just so you know, that you may know.
Yeah.
The first one is Wayne Gretzky, the hockey player.
I do.
Yeah. And the second one is Alexander Graham Bell, and we invented the telephone right here in Brantford.
So we have to thank you for our handheld phones now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great, you know, because I don't like talking on the phone. But I love the text. I don't know what it is, you know. It's just something I can't stand, you know.
I suspect it's your age group.
Yes. Well, I'm 45, so if that means anything to you, yeah. So, yeah. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm well, thank you. Great. I'm looking forward to the interview and been waiting for it for an hour or so. Just been working in the studio, putting in time.
Nice studio. I love a musician's studio. You know, you got all the guitars. Keyboards, all, you know, all kinds of instruments, you know.
I'm sitting in it right now.
Yeah, I just love it. Speaking of instruments, you asked me, am I a guitar player? I am not, you know, not now. I'm learning to be sometimes, you know. What is your favorite guitar of all time?
Favorite guitar to play?
Yes.
I own a Taylor acoustic now that I really enjoy.
Okay.
And I own a Seagull, which is made in Quebec, Montreal, I think, which is a 12-string, and that's a beautiful little guitar too that records nicely. Yeah. I'm usually a bass player.
Yeah.
That's what I do mostly, and I have a Fender Jazz made in the U.S. And I just love that as well.
Yeah, because I read on while I was researching you, on your album Finally Crafted, which came out on last year, 2024, it said that you mostly did your guitar playing with the 12-string. Is that true?
I did a lot of 12-string.
Okay.
Yeah. On the second single, Someone Else Tonight, it's very heavy 12-string. But other than that, I just put a flavor in every once in a while. I do an awful lot on the Taylor, but most of the time that's Barry Haggerty or Scott Udding doing the guitar work. All the electric and some of the acoustic.
Yeah.
So I'm in and out. I do all the bass lines.
Yeah. I guess the major difference between the 12-string and the 6-string is you get more brighter tones with the 12 than the 6. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because it's got the same strings.
Right.
But up an octave. So
It's
just doubling everything up an octave.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess
it just sounds fuller.
Right. Yes. And I guess that's that's what music needs sometimes. Is if you can't reach that note with the 6-string, hey, you got, you know, You got another thing to go, right?
Well, I guess it's more of a tone thing. You can hear it immediately.
Yeah,
you can hear it. It's got very. There's just so you know, they have a trick that they use in the studios an awful lot. They call it a Nashville guitar, and that's where they don't actually use a 12 string. They use the upper strings of a 12 string on a 6 string, and then record that as a separate guitar. And it's close to a 12 string sound, but a little bit different.
Right. Yeah. I think I told you this before we recorded. I'm more like a guitar collector than a player, because I just ordered me a Fender Thin Line, and the only reason why I just love acoustic guitars, you know. But pretty much all the acoustics have like a wider body, you know. Mm-hmm. And I have CP, and it's hard for me to reach around that big old body. So I just figured a Thin Line would work better for me, because it's more like an electric, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
I have small hands, so you have to pick what you can play.
Yeah. Right, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Now, like, I would love to own a Fender Precision bass, because I love the sound of those.
Right.
But I stick with the Jazz, because they got a thinner neck, so I can ride around a lot easier.
Yeah, the Jazz basses, yeah. Speaking of basses, can you tell me, I do respect basses, all, you know, basses player, a lot now. I say now because back in high school, my ear wasn't really developed much, and my ear could not hear the bass in the songs at all. Now it's starting to bring. Now it's starting to bring more bass in my ear. You know, back then, do you think that basses weren't really perceived well as they are now? You know, or do you think that they were? We just didn't really, you know. Listening,
I think that for a while people were listening to better and better stereos and better situations. Listening in car stereos improved.
Right,
you can hear the bass better. I think that trend might be reversing, because a lot of people now just listen to music on their phone, and if they're listening on their phone, they're not even hearing the bass.
Okay,
And yet, when they go to a club, that's all you hear is bass.
Right, yeah, because the bassist wants to stand out, which I agree, you know, because he's, him and the drummer really speak either, you know. They're the backbone of the song, you know.
And
they have to, really be heard.
They have to be, I spent years and years and years on stage just trying to tighten up that kick drum and the bass.
Right, interesting. So when I was researching you too, so let's talk about your song called "Someone Else Tonight." You know, I think that's perfect.
That's the next single I'm just putting out now. Yeah.
Yes, and it's on Finally Crafted, and you can hear it on anywhere you get the music from. Everybody. Mm-hmm. So someone stated, I don't know if it's you or somebody else stated, but you. Started with the drum tracks, and then bass, then 12 string, and then guitar, and then your vocals. Do you use that method throughout your whole songs, or just this song? Because really, you're the first person to actually lay out, you know, what you use first to stay out. Because I've been doing this for 5 years, and I never, you know. Yeah,
that's generally what I do when I'm recording, because a lot of the guys that I use are elsewhere. They don't come into the situation. Like my guitar player has his own studio in Peterborough, which is 3 hours from here. My keyboard player has his own studio, which is also about 3 hours from here in Port Hope. So I send them the music. So to send them something to work with, they've never heard the song before, I pretty much have to have enough of a finished product that they can play to it.
Yeah.
So I generally do it all, and then quite often I'll take off some of my guitar parts back off and let the guitar player do what he does.
Right.
And I've even gone so far as to put keyboards on it just to demonstrate what I'm talking about to the keyboard player. Later I remove them and let him have his thing, but
yeah.
Yeah, generally that's what they do.
Okay. Yeah, because
now you were talking about Someone Else Tonight. There's a really interesting story about that. I started with what you're talking about. I sent all that out to the keyboard player. So I had the 12 string acoustic, the bass guitar, the drums, and the vocals. Okay, and I told him I'd like to make this a bit Celtic. So if you can use accordion on it, great. Yeah. Other than that, do what you want to do. And I had no idea what I was going to get, but I do trust Steve. Steve's amazing. He plays in one of the top bands in Canada right now, Jim Cuddy Band. They're just fantastic. They're gold records and everything. Eh? Yeah. And I've known Steve 20 years, okay, maybe more. So yeah. I know what I'm getting with him. Okay. Now, I also sent the very same night, sent the same thing to my mandolin player who lives in Peterborough, and he was working on it the same night. He sent it back to me, and I was just editing his parts when the part from Steve arrived in the email.
Yeah.
And I flew them both into the recording studio, and you'll never guess, just the way it is on the album, I never hardly touched a thing.
Perfect, right.
And one would play and the other would play, and then one would play, the other would play, and they never got in each other's way, and I don't know how that worked. It was just weird. Like, totally weird. And then it took me, like, all I did was I moved two bars of music.
That's it. Two bars.
All right. Two bars. Yeah. Nothing. Wow. Just a little, take that out, and move it over there.
Yeah. Mm. That's got to be something magical in the air, you know?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I called my wife and I said, you got to listen to this.
You're like, I just moved two bars and that's it, man.
That's it.
Yeah.
If you listen to how that song goes together, mm-hmm. the interplay, especially at the end of the song, we all take a second, like it just goes from one, the lead guitar, and then you'll hear the background vocalist will come in for a second, the bass will jump up, the drums will do something, the keyboards will do something, all just one at a time, but it all just fit together like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. You know, very, very few artists get that from people that they work with, you know? So,
yeah. But it's partly because Steve and I have worked together so often. We sort of read each other. Right. It's almost like being on stage, because we used to play together on stage a lot too.
Yeah. Is Steve part of, was Steve part of the Hawkins Band? Because I read that your backing band is was his backing band, correct? Or did
no.
I get that? Okay.
No, he was in and out of my original band was called Cadillac Ranch.
Okay.
And he was in and out of that quite a lot, in and out of that band, but he wasn't in at the time we did the thing with Hawkins. I did some recording with Hawkins, and that's how I got to know him.
Yeah.
I did some bass lines for him. And then later on, I just happened to be at his place working on a recording with his son, Robin Hawkins, who's a guitar player and has his own band as well. And the two of us were working in the living room, and Ronnie comes walking through the door. Now, you know who Ronnie is, right?
Yeah.
He comes walking through, and he's all excited. He's walking about a foot off the ground. He says, boys, he says, I was just talking to, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's a member of parliament. He's a politician. And he was putting together this a SARS concert, a benefit. He was putting this all together, the Canadian government. Mm-hmm. And he says, I just got off the phone with him. He says, we're going to be opening for the Rolling Stones and AC/DC.
I love AC/DC, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And well, there's other bands there.
Rush. Yeah.
Rush was there. The Guess Who.
Yeah.
They were all there that day. And he says, I'm going to have Cadillac Ranch be my backup band. And he said this right on, it was funny because he had a CTV, which is a national television station up here, like a national network. Mm-hmm. Following him around from room to room to room, they were doing a documentary on him because he had been cancerous and they thought he was dying.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then the funniest thing happened. They had started by doing a documentary thinking he was dying and they were going to get to know him, right?
Right.
he had talked to a faith healer, a young fellow in his early 20s from out in Vancouver, and the doctors were absolutely astounded when he went into remission.
Nice. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
They had no reason. So the documentary quickly switched around to the, being about that.
Yeah.
They pivoted right then.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, by the time we got to the SARS concert, it came out of remission again, the cancer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, he didn't die from it. He lived for 20 more years after that. But but it was enough to throw him off the that. And I don't know if you heard about that concert.
I don't think I have, though, sir.
600,000 people, more than Woodstock. It was huge.
How many did Woodstock have? Because I think it was 400,000, right, or something?
Yeah, no, 600,000.
Yeah.
Wow. That was in 2003 in Downsview, just outside of Toronto.
Yeah. Wow. So, working with Ronnie, how has that profoundly influenced your career? And how did you carry that to your legacy about your music, of your music?
As a band leader, I learned an awful lot of the tricks of the trade. And as an entertainer, I learned a lot just from sitting back behind him and watching him. Watch how he worked a crowd, how he maneuvered around the egos of the people in the bands, how he treated his band members, how he paid them, just all these little things. I just was a sponge. I just soaked it all in when I was close to him.
Yeah, nice.
And, and I applied them.
Yeah.
There were some guys that I kept 15 years in my band with me.
That's a long time, you know.
Well, it's still ticking because they're still with me.
Good.
The drummer and the guitar, one of the guitar players that are on this album. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go back to the song "I Don't Care" for just a minute, because I read something that's very, very. I want to see if this is true or not, you know, because I want to be, very true to what I talk about, you know. Mm-hmm. So I read that the "I Don't Care" that came from short tutorials from TikTok, right?
No, I think that you misunderstood that.
Right,
I've been doing tutorials on TikTok, or at least I started to.
It's called Do It Yourself Musician, right?
Yeah. But this was to do with how to work a recording studio. That's something totally separate.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't care. Basically, that song developed back in the 80s. And I actually did a version of that, which was very Dwight Yoakam sounding.
I love
different groove and everything. So I thought I'd try something totally different, and I changed it up, and I wanted it to be kind of a up-tempo, danceable rocker. And by the time we were done, including everybody's parts, to me, I'll tell you who it sounds like. It sounds very much like early Elton John to me.
Yeah.
Or maybe Dr. John.
Yes.
Somebody like that.
Yeah.
But I've heard, you know, but that's one of my faves. I like that one. It was fun when it came together. I love the sax part, especially the bass sax. I mean, that home.
Well, okay, so your album, Finally Crafted, which is, I think it's like the perfect album for like driving down the road, you know, not carrying like wind in your hair, you know. But I do get the notion that you were influenced majorly, not, you know, some of it, by blues. You know, it's a very bluesy album, and I love the blues. My mom's from Mississippi. You know, I was raised on blues, kind of, sort of. But there's a little hit of some groove and some jazz in it too. Am I correct on that? Okay.
Oh yeah, I mean, I love both those genres.
Yes.
Just prior to recording that album, we had put together a trio, a blues trio, and we had been rehearsing for 2 or 3 years and learned a whole night of material of stuff that I had never learned before and never heard before.
Yeah.
And, you know, going way back to the roots of blues. And I love blues.
Blues is
absolutely.
Yeah. Blues is where it's at, because...
Who's your favorite blues artist?
Oh, God. Blues artist. It's got to be BB King, King, or Stevie Ray Vaughan. You know, those are the two major ones. Now there was a guy in Clarksdale, Mississippi, where my mom's from. We visited all the time, and his name was Super Chicken. You know, and he was like by far the best blues guitarist ever that I've ever heard. You know, but with folks like that, it's like you wonder why they don't get signed at all. You know, because they're the best of the best. You know, because I've had friends that know somebody who can really well Slash or Stevie Ray Vaughan or Jimmy Hendrix, but they're never signed. You know, and I'm wondering why that is. You know,
but bad business sense, bad luck, bad timing.
Right.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Why was I never signed? I don't know.
Yeah. I guess it's all about location too. You know.
Oh, listen. I mean, I played in a band with.
Yeah.
Okay. His name is Greg Wells. We played together in Peterborough as we're growing up, the same age.
Yeah.
I went one way, and I got my own band together. He got in with a guy named Kim Mitchell. You probably don't know Kim Mitchell, but in Canada, he's gold record and platinum records and really well known.
Right.
Okay. From that opening, he went to K.D. Lang. Now, you know K.D. Lang.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay, so he played in the K.D. Lang band. After that, he went to California. He's on a beach, and this is what we're talking about luck. He's on a beach, and he sees a girl.
Right.
And he talks to the girl, and they get chummy. The girl was Carol King's daughter.
Oh, my God.
The Carol King. Yeah. You know who Carol King is.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. After that, everything just went like this. Now, look up Greg Wells. Yeah. 135 million records sold. He's probably the top producer in the world right now. He's with everybody. Anybody, you name the artist, he's with them.
That is really, really good luck.
Yeah,
for him, just exactly. Seeing a girl on the beach, I'm like, I'm amazed by it. Yeah, because Carole King is an icon.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, you look him up. He's writing songs for Elton John, Aerosmith. The Pope called him over, not this one, but another one, to organize his spring festival. He's played on the Grammys with Katy Perry, everything.
Yeah.
Adele, I mean, he just works with them all.
And I'm sure he's worked with Leland Sklar, because I interviewed him a few years ago. And that dude's worked with thousands of them. So I'm sure him and,
everybody from the Doobie Brothers, the Steely Dan, everybody. Yeah.
He worked with everybody, So, I want to talk about you and your genre, okay? So I'm confused, but not really, because so on Apple Music it says rock, you're rock, okay?
Yeah.
But I keep reading that you are Americana / country.
Mm-hmm.
What do you go towards to? Or is all in the correct?
It depends what you want to call what. I call myself Americana.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to shut the door to country people, because I keep getting on all these country charts. Like, I was on the CICC, which is the Canadian Independent Country Countdown, which is nationwide. And I made it to number 9, and that's country music.
Yeah.
Go figure. And that was with Someone Else Tonight.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, I don't consider that a country song. It's country-ish. Because I was a country singer for so many years, it's going to always come off sounding a bit like country.
Yeah.
But I started off, my love is really Southern rock.
Okay.
Which is, you know, country and blues combined almost, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of that, who is your favorite Southern rock band right now?
Oh.
Yeah.
It's always going to be the Allman Brothers.
Amen to that, brother. Hell yeah. Yeah. Allman Brothers are legit. Yeah. They're
cool. I got a chance to see Greg just the year before he passed. Eh?
Yeah.
Wow, was that good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Because, so I'm sure. Well, is he the last original member to be in that band, or is, I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay.
Not sure.
I'll have to look
it up. I think his son is out there doing something right now.
Okay. Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. cool.
I kind of had a correspondence with him. He heard "I Don't Care" and he thought it was pretty good. He said,
"Yeah, dude." Dude, I bet you were over the moon about that. You're right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No fooling.
Yeah. Okay, so like I said before, Final Corruption was last year, 2024.
Yes.
So speaking of the album again, I hope you don't mind. So is there any song on that record that reflects a pivotal moment in your life? And if it was, you know, what's the story behind it?
Okay.
You know,
there is.
Okay.
Are you familiar with "Soul About You"?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, that's one of almost the ballady one that starts with the organ and it ends with organ. And it's a song about a guy she's left. She's gone.
Yeah.
And she's left him in a home all by himself. There's, you know, she's taken half the furniture. He doesn't have a friend in the world. He's just bereft and wondering what, you know, he's still what the basic thing about this is, I'm getting by, but all the time I'm thinking about you. Everything's about you. And he's at that stage.
Right.
Well, I can remember vividly in the 80s when I wrote that, sitting upstairs one night, 3 o'clock in the morning, couldn't sleep, quietly playing my guitar. And all of a sudden the chords came to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I thought, boy, that's a nice chord progression. I never do it that way.
Okay.
Never do it that way. I mm-hmm. always write lyrics first and then music.
Okay.
But this time it was the opposite way around. And that's just what happened. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. That sat on the shelf for a month. And I couldn't come up with anything that I thought everything I tried was corny. Then I read this book that someone gave me for a birthday by Jimmy Webb. Now, you familiar with Jimmy Webb?
I've heard of the name, yes. Sir.
Okay, he's the guy that wrote Wichita Lineman, Up, Up and Away.
Okay.
A number of really big hits in the 60s and 70s. Great songwriter.
Right.
Anyways, it's a book on songwriting. And he had a suggestion. He said, if you're stuck, what you want to do is you take that music and you hum any nonsense you want, just anything you want, just hum it away like crazy and record it on a tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
So then you play it back, but you turn it down so low, it is only barely, barely, barely able to hear it. He said, and your subconscious will fill the words in if you're lucky. Okay, so,
right.
So I tried it.
Yeah.
I did that. I set the tape recorder up and I played it back and I got out a piece of paper and a pencil. And I kid you not, I wrote that sucker as I was going. I just wrote it as fast as I could write. And it all just come popping out of my subconscious.
Yeah.
Funny thing was, it had nothing to do with what I was going through in life at that point.
Hmm.
But 10 years later, every word of it came true. I was sitting in the house, the empty house. She had just left.
Hmm.
I was all alone, didn't have a friend in the world. Everything, word for word.
That's gotta be like some kind of sign from, I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
And the fact that you never do that just speaks volumes too, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I was on, and the funny thing was I hadn't sang it in the studio until after this event had occurred. And it gave me a fresh way. The pain was fresh when I sang it. So if you hear that, it sounds pretty legitimate when I'm singing it.
Right.
It's because it was.
Yeah. Wow, that's magical too, you know. It for people who don't believe that magical is not I mean that music is not magical, you know. I mean, just
yeah.
Listen to Casey Story, man, you know, because you're like witness about music, right?
I'm sorry.
I said you're like a living witness what music can do.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So we got a few more questions for you and then we'll let you go. So I know that I always ask this cause I never know who's listening, you know, maybe there's some, potential musicians in the future, you know, and you've been around the block a moment or two, you know,
longer than you would
longer
think.
Longer than, right. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
If you were just take a wild stab at this, what's my age?
Looking at you right now.
Yep.
I say 53.
Yeah. I'm going to be a senior citizen in less than a month.
No, you're
just
not.
Over a month.
No, yeah. You're not. I don't
I
believe
am.
It. I do not believe it. You are looking great, brother. You know.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I've been around a little while. Yeah.
You've been around the block. All right. Yeah. So, there could be some upcoming musicians listening to the show. So you are in the music industry, you know, with all that entails, you know. Is there any words of advice on what to look in the industry and what to look out in the industry? You know, because there's always good and bad, you know, and I'm sure you've got this question before, you know.
Everything's changed. I mean, the industry that I grew up to was so totally different. You could work 7 nights a week playing.
Right.
And the only nights a week when you didn't get less than a full house would be Monday and Tuesday. You know, and you'd have lineups on Friday and Saturday around the block.
Right, yeah, because Monday and Tuesday is the beginning of the week. Yeah, yeah.
I used to make my living playing in bars. Yeah, I mean, like, and decent, you know, decent living. I was pulling in back in the 80s, 50 grand a year.
Yeah.
Which, for a musician, that's unheard of. But I don't know that doesn't exist anymore. There's no, I don't know where you even play. Like, you're just playing for the love of playing anymore, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just finding my way now, trying to, you know, push my music out there. And now, I don't know if you knew this, but I also worked a day job.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I was working driving bus. I just retired from that. And that's when I decided to put this album out last year.
Yeah, well, it's moving on up, yeah. You know, so I mean, you're doing a great job.
So I guess my advice is, don't quit your day job. Probably the best way to do this is as a hobby or as an extra. You know, maybe this is your other source of income, but don't depend on it. Oh, for heaven's sakes, don't think you're going to do that, because as good as you are playing that guitar, there's 100 guys out there probably in your own town that can play as good or better.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I interviewed what's his name, the guy who was on American Idol. He's a janitor, but he won American Idol this past year sometime, but he's still janitor. He's still doing his job, but then he's getting all of the music thing aside, you know. So I guess it's like a hobby for him, and
well,
I know
that's a smart man. He's not putting all his eggs in one basket.
Pretty smart too, so.
But I mean, do it because you love doing it, and the one good upside to that whole method of operation is you can do what you want. I can put out an Americana album, even if no one knows what Americana is. I don't care.
Yeah.
If I want to put something like, I don't know if you caught, I put a reggae song on that album.
I don't think I caught it right now. Yeah.
No, it's called The Rebel. Want to check that one out? Okay. That's totally different again for the rest of the album, but. Yeah. That's the nice thing about putting it out yourself and not worrying about making your living from it. You have a lot more freedom,
right?
What you want.
Yeah, nice.
And you don't. In the end, you don't have to please anybody but yourself.
No, you do it for you and do it for your own. You know.
Yeah. Now, if you were Justin Timberlake, life and death depends on whether you put the exact right song out.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people expect better, bigger and better music from bigger artists, you know.
They want familiar. They want their next song to sound like their last song.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, again, it's too bad that those days are gone. But at the same time, it's kind of neat where we're at right now. You can do a recording studio in your basement, which is what I've done.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, yeah.
But something else has changed now in the music industry, and I'm sure you know it too, is talking with these musicians and these independent artists. They always tell me, you got to play covers to get people in, to see you, but then you have to play your originals later on in the show, you know. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like that back in the 80s and 90s, you know. Because but there wasn't a lot of covers back then as now. You know, now everybody's doing covers, and I keep hearing from independent artists, you gotta play covers to get people to see you, you know, and then you can chime with your own, you know, original.
There's nothing wrong with doing covers. I mean, John Mayer, his live album, he puts out a Tom Petty and somebody else. I forget who the second one was, but he's doing covers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not interested in doing covers anymore. I've done that to death in my life.
Right.
I mean, I lived off that.
Yeah.
And singing Alan Jackson, you know, whatever.
Alan Jackson, you can't beat him, you know. You can't beat him, you know. But I understand that it gets kind of redundant, you know, doing it day and day and night. Yeah, yeah. So you want to, you know, up the game with your own music, you know.
Yep. Yeah. So that's the next project. I want to get this playing festivals and
nice,
you know, just the ones I feel like playing because I don't depend on this for a living.
Right. Right. I do have another question for you. Have you ever gotten a bad sweater for Christmas? And I think I know where. Yeah, yes, I love bad sweaters. You know, I never got one in my life, thank God. But I mean, I hate that sweater. Is a single came November 29th last year. So, have you got a bad sweater? I mean, is a sweater?
Okay. I don't know if you caught that, but that's really my wife doing all the talking on that.
No, I didn't. Okay, yeah.
And she's not anything like the character. I had to coax it out of her, but it was a lot of fun. We did that. Now, if you're paying attention to the album, check out the song "Don't Keep Me Waiting."
Okay,
it's the same song.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My publicist told me there's a contest coming up. You got 2 weeks to put a song together. He says, just do an old Christmas standard or whatever. And I started thinking to myself, royalties, because this is something that pays royalties. It's on radio, right?
Right.
I said, royalties-wise, that doesn't leave you much. That leaves you all the old and, you know, the whole Holy Night and Silent Night. And,
I didn't
feel like it.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I just kept on hearing that song, and I thought, that's fun and up-tempo. I'll try it. So I sat down and I wrote that very quickly. I couldn't believe it just came to me. The lyric change.
Yeah.
Then I started putting all the bells on myself, make it sound Christmassy, and I...
Yeah. Right, yeah.
I bought one of those, and I got Mary Ellen in to do the singing parts, and then my wife and I just did that, and we threw it all together in less than 2 weeks. And that won Cash Box's contest for the year. That's most requested song. They even had requests coming from Europe for that.
I love the song. The song's great. You know, hell yeah. It reminds me of stuff that I did not want to get for Christmas. You know, and I guess that's what, you know, bad sweaters are kind of, you know. But everybody likes a bad sweater, you know.
Yeah.
Here or there, you know. I mean, they're always fun.
Did you watch the video for it?
I did not. I listened to the song, but I didn't know that there was a video for it right now.
I have
but
I'll 13, check it out. 13 videos out.
Okay.
Right now, and that's one of them. You want to check that out? It's cute. It's all the people with bad sweaters.
I'll find it and then I'll link it in the description so the audience can go to that and view that video. Three more questions and then you know we'll let you go. Okay, so let's go in the Wayback Machine, okay? Let's go to Casey in his 17, 18, 19 year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're inside your room looking around the walls, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any musical posters on your walls? Or is there any posters at all?
Poster of the Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders and Farrah Fawcett, but I don't think there was any musical ones.
No? Well, that's all you need, right? It's Farrah Fawcett, man. Farrah Fawcett was killing it back in the day. Yeah. I loved her, too.
But here's something that's interesting. Do you remember the song, it's the last one on the album, called Waiting for the Rain to Fall?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I wrote that when I was 17.
17?
17, that's how long it's been in the can.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So another question comes up, right? So what made you hold on to these songs so long? You didn't want to put them out until now.
I got married early.
Okay.
I met a girl and she had a 1-year-old son and I adopted him and married her. And I was with her for 24 years, and I had to go make some money. So I worked a day job, and then when that fell through, I started working in bars. And there just was not any budget. I had barely getting by, and there wasn't any budget to record. And back then, nobody had a home recording studio. You had to go into a studio.
Right.
And that's a lot of money. I finally put one out in the 80s, and that was where I learned, you know, how to record, but it wasn't my studio, and it cost a lot of money. That was like 30 grand.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, to put that out. Yeah. So none of these really saw the light of day, and I, by then, I had like 30 songs. Like, I don't know if I've mentioned to you, I already have the next album recorded.
Okay.
I've already got the album after that recorded as well.
Everything's ready to roll, right?
It's just ready to roll, just mixing right now. Yeah. I'm just about done the mixing for the next album. I'm hoping for a July release on that, and then the next year for the one after that.
So pretty soon release group. Okay, yeah.
But all these were in the can. That's just my whole life right there in music.
Wow. Well, I mean, you're skyrocketing. So I mean, I don't see the album. I see your album sales going just upwards. You know, not anywhere but up. Yeah. So.
I'm having a lot of fun. You know, it's not even about the sales, although that's nice too.
That would be good, you know, but
radio play and everything, that's all wonderful. But that all that is to me is proof that if I had started earlier in life, I probably would have done real well. It's a lot of fun, and this is a hobby for me right now, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, you're doing extremely well now, you know, so,
I'm very happy with it. I'm getting lots of airplay and lots of magazine coverage. I got a great publicist. He's got me on the cover of Cashbox and Record World International and Find Your Sounds.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so next question is, I think you're going to hit me with this one, okay? So here in America, we have the Mount Rushmore, you know, all four presidents on the wall, on the big rocks, you know. What is your Mount Rushmore? Who are your four favorite bands or artists of all time?
Well, you got the first one right there.
Yep.
Yeah, Mount Rushmore.
Rush. Yeah.
I grew up in Canada when Rush was it for us.
Yeah.
We just absolutely love that band. Yeah. Really liking John Mayer a lot.
Yeah.
And Steely Dan.
I've heard good things, yeah.
I mean, those three, but I mean, there's so many others. I mean, I went and saw the Doobie Brothers, 4 years ago, and they're still
Doobie Brothers. That's got to be number one for the Mount Rushmore of all time for you, right?
Yeah. There's a few.
And I know it's going to change as soon as I get off the hair with you, tomorrow.
Just think about it. Yeah. How did I forget that?
Right, yeah. You're like, why did I name this band? You know, AC/DC, you know, Rolling Stones, and blah, 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 you know, this, that, you know.
Well, the Beatles. It all started with the Beatles for me.
Yeah, but I actually fell in love with the Beatles when my Aunt Molly told me about them. You know, she grew me up on the Beatles, and my mom grew me up on Elvis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And those were it for me for a good long while.
My dad told me one night in 1964, he says, "Your son, you're not going to bed early tonight. You're going to stay up and watch something." He says, "You're never going to see the likes of this again." And we watched the Ed Sullivan Show, and I got my little pajamas on with the feet in them. You know, I'm 4 years old.
Yeah, right.
Beatles came on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I saw them, and I was just
jaw
dropped, you know. Yeah. And ever since then, it's been the rest of my life thinking that way. And you know, one song on the album, The Rebel, I had the pleasure of getting that mastered at Abbey Road Studio. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm going to ask you this, and I probably know the answer. Have you ever met Ringo or John? I mean, Paul, not John.
No, I haven't. I think I just missed them because you know who used to hang around them a lot was Ronnie Hawkins.
Oh, okay.
And John Lennon, Yoko, and George Harrison all spent weeks living with Ronnie just to get away from people. And they used to come to his house.
Yeah. Just to feel feel normal, I guess, you know.
Yeah. You get away from it all.
Yeah.
It was that kind of place, though. It's just on a lake, just beautiful.
Secluded. Big, yes.
Yeah. Very comfortable house, big and homey.
Right. Well, our final question for you today is going to be the hardest question besides those two questions. But I figure you can knock it out of the park, you know?
Sure.
Is there one song, artist, or album that you can listen to, but you can't tell me or your wife or anybody else how it makes you feel deep inside your heart?
Yep. One song.
Okay.
It's called Into the Mystic by Van Morrison.
Yes. I love that song.
Yeah. But there's another level, another layer on that. There's something very mystical about that song.
Yeah. No pun intended, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's deeply personal.
That's just really, really captivating and moving, you know? And every time I listen to it, I just stop whatever I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
If I'm busy doing something else, I'll just stop and listen to it, you know, because that song to me is one of the most powerful songs in history that I don't think anybody else can capture besides Van Morrison. I mean, he's one of a kind.
You know? Did a real nice remake of that was Colin James.
Okay.
Check that out if you get a chance. But it's not as good as Van Morrison.
No,
but it's close.
Van Morrison, come on now. You know, it's great. It's great. It's great. All right. Do you have a website? Because because the only thing I found of yours is Bandcamp.
No.
Okay.
My website is www.kcarmstrong444.com.
Got it. Okay.
And everything you want right there is all connected in that website, right on the one page even.
All the links, you know, to Instagram.
Everything.
You're on TikTok, you know? I mean, I still don't know. I still don't understand TikTok. I know it's old, you know, but I'm 45, so I mean, I, you know, don't really have that kind of time to learn a new app, you know. But I'm getting there. But but we're on TikTok, you know. And are you still doing your do-it-yourself musicians on TikTok?
No, not yet. Okay. I've been so busy mixing and stuff. I've sort of let that project go. That's gonna be a later on project.
Okay. So that is coming back.
Oh yeah. I've got one or two episodes on there right now, and I kind of. At that point, I got sidetracked.
Perfect. I'll link all the links in the bottom of the description here. And then we honestly love you, and we want you to come back anytime you want to. And
you let me know. I'd love to. It's been great talking to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming on. All right. Okay. And with that said, everybody, thank you so much for listening. And always remember, when the words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.